This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Movie Mastery, the podcast where we watch the movies that you tell us to. I am your host, John. With me, as always, is my co-host, Jeff.
Hello!
Oh, wonderful. Jeff, how you doing?
Oh, buddy, I'm doing fine, because tomorrow we're going to get in the sky and go to Chicago.
We're going to be in the sky.
We're gonna be in the very sky, hurtling through the spheres on a...
these spheres.
In a pressurized tube in defiance of God.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I fly, in order to spit in the face of God.
Exactly. Every time he doesn't punish me with death, I win a little more.
Every time I'm in the air and the plane lands safely, I know I've beaten God. And I defy him to crash my plane. Do it, I say. Do it. But the coward never does.
Indeed. Listen to an Alanis Morissette song, Why Don't You? So yeah, just because we're going to be out at C2E2, baby.
That's right. When this goes up, we'll probably already be there. By the time you listen to it, we'll probably be back.
That's true. This one's going up a little late. We'll be in Chicago, but on this Saturday, the 1st of April, we'll be putting on a fun live show.
That's right. If you manage to listen to this in time and are in Chicago.
Yeah. And you can find us. And you can afford us.
You might be able to get a couple guys to talk to you or something.
Sign your book.
So this time around, we rolled up 1984's The Ice Pirates.
The Ice Pirates.
Not to be confused with the hockey team of the same name who took their name from this movie.
I did confuse it with that. I only watched several games that the Ice Pirates played.
Yeah, when I messaged you that we were watching The Ice Pirates, you must have gone and watched several games of The Ice Pirates with a Y.
I kept wondering why there were more ducks there than I expected. I was only expecting...
The Ice Pirates hockey team famously has ducks in it.
I figured they were playing against the Mighty Ducks. I mean, I don't know if the Ice Pirates are in the same league or whatever. I mean,
no, they're not a professional team.
Oh, they're not. Oh, well then...
I mean... professional in that they are like minor league.
Oh, okay. Very good. So like whatever team feeds the Mighty Ducks, the less Mighty Ducks, I assume.
Yeah, the Mighty Bread that feeds Mighty Ducks.
They're the feeder team to the Mighty Ducks. Motherfucking breadcrumbs, they're called.
Oh, Christ. But yeah, this was an awful movie that was 1984 sci-fi post-apocalypse swashbuckling space opera.
Comedy.
And
supposed to be a comedy.
Yeah, this was originally supposed to be a serious sci-fi film that had a budget of $20 million.
Yeah.
And then MGM went, no, you get $8 million. Also, make it funny. And they were like, what?
And they did. They hired the best screenwriter in the business to remake it and make it funny again. A fella who's also got to his name writing credits such as Mac and Me and Tammy and the T-Rex.
That's right. Director and writer Stuart Raffel.
Mm-hmm.
Good God. The pedigree on this movie.
Yeah, there's an interesting subcategory of Star Wars ripoffs from the early 80s where they don't bother trying to rip off the Luke Skywalker Force part, and instead they just rip off the lovable Han Solo Rogue, and this is one of those.
Yeah.
Where they want you to associate this movie's main character, played by Robert Urich, with Han Solo, just a dirty, low-down space pirate, although here it's a lot more direct.
Yes, and... I mean, one of the big things between the two of these is it's like someone went, hey, Star Wars is popular. That's like a space fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. It's a space samurai movie.
Yeah.
But they heard space fantasy and went, all right, well, we'll do that then. Because this is very much like, what if in space everyone was a knight and had like chainmail and a sword?
Yeah, all the bad guys in this are the Templars because they managed to crawl their way into this one. And they're basically all just dressed like cosplay shit is cheaper, I think, is what you find with that, is that it's much easier
it's way easier to go get a doublet and some boots that have those like tops that fold down.
Yeah, a couple of tabards and some coifs of fine mail. Then you're all, you'd be like, yeah, you belong in space. Fuck it. Who gives a shit?
Oh yeah. You can go into the studios like, hey, what do we got in the costume department? They're like, well, we got a whole bunch of medieval shit. And they're like, sold.
Sign
I do not
up.
Care.
Yeah. It's fine.
Oh, God. It is.
It is, however, part of the wonderful two-parter I can think of Angelica Houston in space things.
God bless Angelica Houston in space. It's real sad when you're like, yeah, but Captain EO was like a million times better than this. Then again, the people behind Captain EO are like Steven Spielberg. Yeah. So, you know. Mac and Me or Schindler's List, we got a bit of a difference in quality here.
Sure.
Space Pirates is bad. That's my non-spoiler review before we get into it. It fails to be funny at all. I think there was one gag that I sort of liked, and I wished they kept doing it, and then they didn't. And that was about it.
Huh. Let's see. Yeah, it's mostly just bad robot costumes awkwardly bumping into each other for about an hour and a half. It's not as fun as you would hope. There's a couple of interesting gags here and there and a weird Bruce Valanche cameo that's fun.
God bless.
But
Bruce Valanche showing up in this, and I was like, holy shit, are you center square Bruce Valanche? I'll take you for the block.
So I also do not necessarily recommend it. But it is a fun piece of camp that really screams, I came out 1 year after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, you're like, oh, man, it's nice to see a young Angelica Houston and a young Ron Perlman.
Very, very young Ron Perlman. This predates even, like, his Beauty and the Beast show.
Yeah, this is real early for both of them. So that's something.
It's fun. It's also got John Matuszak, who maybe not the most household of names in the world, but he is, of course, Sloth from the Goonies.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Great pedigree going from this to that. So only swashbuckling films for this gentleman.
Yes. And football. He was, I think he played for the Bears.
Probably.
I think he did. Yeah. He was a neat dude. I think he died kind of tragically shortly after the Goonies or something like that. I forget the details.
I don't remember.
I'm inventing them.
I remember is that he was Sloth. And that he played football, and that is it.
Yeah. And now you know he was in this.
And now I know he was in this. Honestly, I didn't recognize him, and then when I saw the cast listing, I went, hey, wait a minute.
It really feels like he just shoves his way into the movie, too.
Yes, and that was really the fun gag that I was referring to is, Matuszak in this is probably my favorite part of the movie.
He's the best part by a mile, yeah. All right.
Let's go ahead, we'll play a little music, and then we will come back, we will get into a full blow-by-blow spoiler review for 1984's The Ice Pirates.
We are the pirates, we don't do anything, we just stay home and lie around, and if you ask us to do anything, we'll just tell you we don't do anything, but I've never been...
We're back, and it is time to talk about the Ice Pirates.
After first de-ghosting a couple of people and saying that Matuszak played for the Raiders and the Oilers and did not play for the Bears.
Ah.
There. Okay, just letting people off the hook. So
I don't know how many big NFL buffs there are that would listen to this.
It only takes one.
We're looking out for you, one person that listened to this and went, oh, he wasn't on the Bears.
Maybe there's an enormous Sloth fan out there as well.
Oh.
Just the world's biggest Sloth from Goonies fan. How dare you?
I was going to say, I'm sure there's plenty of Sloth fans out there. They're adorable.
I enjoy them as well.
They're so cute, but they've got big old talons. It's weird.
Yeah, although their talons are harmless because they have the muscular potential of like a wet towel.
Oh, yeah. You know, if you see those coming at you, you're like, oh, no.
It's not so much. They're not as slow as they're super slow, but like they can kind of move their arms around at a normal pace. It's just that if they get you with them, it's. I've never actually held a sloth, but my girlfriend did spend a few months in Costa Rica once at working in an animal shelter where she helped rescue a bunch of them. So her descriptions of them to me sounded exactly like the times I spent working with penguins. And when penguins peck you, you're like, oh, this is a big bird. This could probably peck the shit out of you. And no, it's like being poked with like the rolled up end of a pillow. It's like they're just trying to gently remind you that they don't know anyone here and they want to leave the party.
Hey,
can we go?
Hey. Hey, have we spent enough time here? Hey.
I don't like your friends.
It's okay. I don't like my friends. So Ice Pirates lets us know, setting-wise, right off the bat, that it is the far future, and water is an incredibly scarce commodity.
Mm-hmm. They've used it up. I don't know how.
They explain it in the movie way at the end.
Yeah.
But to start with, they're just like, oh, there was interplanetary wars and now the galaxy is dry and water's the only thing that matters.
Mm-hmm.
And only the evil Templars from planet Mithra have any control over this resource.
Right.
And they transport it around as ice.
Yes.
Which is
why this is the Ice Pirates movie. I assume it's because big blocks of styrofoam that have been lacquered and spray painted to look like ice are cheaper than big tanks of water.
That is probably true.
Given that the ice never actually does anything in the movie beyond be a thing that's in the background of some of the shots.
No, we don't. There is not a single shot of actual ice that exists in this whole movie.
Yes.
We never see. Even in, like, someone's glass, no one has ice in it.
No, all we ever see is opaque, light blue bricks that are enormous.
Yeah.
So we know they're not ice. And I get the impression that the Ice Pirates thing might be a holdover from when this was a more serious movie. Like, the whole idea of, like, oh, it's hard sci-fi and everyone's out in the world, in the galaxy trying to get the water. Like, that's an interesting prospect. I mean, of course, it falls apart immediately when you're like, water doesn't vanish when you drink it or even when you, like, boil it. It just changes forms and goes somewhere. It's still there. It's really hard to get it off a planet all the way.
Yeah, we find out, I'll just go ahead and put this here, like at almost the very end of this movie, that they were like, oh, there used to be 7 planets that were very water rich.
Yes.
And that's where all of the galaxy's water was coming from. But in the big galactic war that happened, 6 of those planets got destroyed, and one of them got shoved so far near the galactic center that it's inaccessible because getting to the galactic center means going through a time warp.
Yeah, there's a time warp that is used mostly for gags.
Yeah, I mean, the whole problem with the time warp is if you try and go through it, you begin to age so rapidly that by the time you got there, everyone on board would just be a husk.
Yes.
So that is the general, like, premise of it, but you do not get the premise of it until the last, like, 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, no. In the beginning, you just get turned off to your main character immediately as they
oh, God.
As they raid a Templar ice transport ship and just sort of you get to see all these main characters. You've got Ron Perlman here as a guy named Zeno. Angelica Houston's kicking around in a hilarious, like, chain link wireframe. Halter
it's
top.
So weird.
He's got a weird outfit on. But they board and raid a ship. There's one guy on the squad at who's his name?
Roscoe. Yeah.
He's like their robot expert.
Yeah, everyone sort of has a thing. So you're like, all right, Jason, our main character, is the captain. Roscoe is their like engineer and main robot guy.
Mm-hmm.
Maida is Angelica Houston, and she's like the badass and the pilot.
Uh-huh.
And then Ron Perlman's Zeno
is a navigator.
Kind of.
There's one part where there's like they mention what his job is when they're being chased by a ship, and they're like, I sure hope our master of navigation input new types of turn coordinates. And he goes, I'm working on it.
Oh, yeah, because they were like, oh, we need to do evasive maneuvers. And he's like, oh, they already know the old evasive maneuvers we would do. Do we have the new ones in?
Yeah, and he kind of goes, I'm working on it. You know, in his standard Ron Perlman, I'm phoning this in. This is my first ever film role, and I'm already phoning this in.
I gotta say, the couple scenes where they give Ron Perlman anything to do, like his cooking scene, is fine.
Yeah. But he's all right. The first couple lines he had didn't sound like him at all, and I was really for a second thinking it was early enough that they were like, let's dub this guy. He's not famous. Let's just dub his lines.
No, he has a weird affect that he does a lot of the time in this.
Yes.
But that is basically our main squad, and then they've got a bunch of robots because... For some reason, the main thing that people have is like, oh, instead of us fighting, we just have some robots fight for us.
Mm-hmm.
And even when it would be very easy for us to also join in, we'll just let the robots fight it out.
Yeah, you'll just see all of our main characters standing on the sidelines of any major combat in this, just sort of exhorting robots to go fight, because the robots don't want to. So they're always like, meh, meh, meh. And they're like, no, get in there, you dumb coward. Meh, 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 meh. And they all have swords and axes instead of just guns or something.
Well, yes, because there are like three guns that exist in this entire movie.
Yes.
Everyone else, because they wanted this to be a swashbuckling pirate film in addition to everything else, is running around in standard pirate garb with melee weapons.
Yeah. Yes.
And this is not future mate. We don't have lightsabers or anything. It is straight up just, I have a rapier, and I have an axe, and so on.
Yep. So they use a big laser to cut their way into the enemy ship unnoticed, but it's a whole comedy sequence where they don't cut the hole all the way into the wall, so someone's got to kind of knock it down, and they're taking turns being like, come on, you're being a big wimp. I'll knock it down. I'll knock it down. And when they do finally knock it down, it turns out that they knocked it into a bathroom that an alien is using, and he farts.
That was really where I went, oh, okay, I see what this is doing. I'm going to hate this. Because they were like, oh, we got to get in here. And they dick around. And then when fucking Roscoe just like slams through and falls on the ground in front of a ball sack looking alien that goes, I was like, oh, okay, I hate this. I'm going to hate a lot of this.
You can definitely, it really feels like the jokes were added in the last 5 minutes, because they're none of them are any good. And in this case, it's everyone being like, yeah, take care of that guy. I'll point to the, you know.
Hey, you need to take care of that guy. And then the next person comes in, he points to them, you take care of that guy. And then someone else comes in, you take care of that guy.
And it goes down the line of all their chumps and all their robots until they finally get to one last guy. And
it's like, finally Ron Perlman at the end. He's like, oh, there's no one left. Sorry, and just knocks him on the head.
Yes, bonks him on the head. He goes, probably farts
and
again.
Farts. Yeah. He farts several times.
Yes.
It's bad.
Yes. And now they're wandering around in a big ship. They're going to steal the ice, but there's a team who has to take over the ship and a team that has to take over the ice room. The team who has to take over the ship randomly breaks into the room of the princess of the Mithra or whatever, and she's asleep in a weird hyper bed where they're using gas to keep her asleep for some reason. Even though, as far as we can tell, she's just taking a nap.
Yeah.
It's nothing special. It's just a sci-fi thing they built.
Yeah, they were like, you're going to find Princess Karina in, like, one of those, like, metal or glass coffin beds that you can kind of, like, roll the top over.
Uh-huh.
And it'll be filled with gas because it's so weird and futuristic. I'm like, why? This isn't we're going to be in hypersleep for a while. This is just, you're in bed. Your nanny is hanging out awake in your room.
Yeah.
No one else on this ship is doing that. It's just you.
So they just take out the nanny. They're just using her room as a room to hide from guards in. And then they don't take her out. They just catch her. But then Robert Urich's Jason goes into the other room and sees the princess. And he's like, hey, a princess. She's hot. So we should just take her with us, right? Because she's hot.
Hey, but what about the we could get a ransom? And they're like, no, shut up. We know why you're doing this.
Also, you promised you wouldn't do this anymore. Just kidnap random hot ladies.
And then line of the film, he's like, whatever happened to raping and pillaging? And I'm like, ha ha, I hate the main character too. Oh, this is great. I hate everyone.
Yeah. I remember when we used to rape and pillage. Yeah. Yeah. That was a bad time.
That's, hey man, don't. Be nostalgic for raping and pillaging. That's not a thing to endear me to you.
Oh, you saying you're not a big fan of the comic strip Hagar the Horrible, which to my knowledge still goes to this day?
I mean, not really.
Okay. It isn't very funny.
It's not great.
No, it's just Andy Capp and they have horned
helmets.
It's
a syndication comic. It's not great.
No, none of them are especially good.
But they do leave her, go do their business. They, you know, lose a shitload of their various robots. And I will say this now. We don't need to get into it every single time, but know anytime there is robot business, it takes too long.
Yeah,
it
takes too long. The robot costumes, apparently you can't see out of them because 90% of the comedy of the robot sequences is them just sort of bumping into each other and walls.
Oh, yeah. One of the comedy things is like, oh, this guy malfunctioned and he keeps kicking the robot next to him. And you're like, that's not funny. Why are you spending so much time on it?
There's a part where they're fighting one robot and the robot's better than all the robots they brought with them. And Roscoe's like, yeah, that's a DN-40. He's better than all of our robots put together. And they're like, well, then how come he didn't buy those? And he's like, because it's more expensive than all of our robots put together. And he's just like, yeah, okay.
All right.
All right.
But it's also one of those things where for some reason, they're just like, okay, robots, you go fight. There's one real good robot. We got like four shitty robots. All right, you guys, real poorly, one at a time, go fight him.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we will sit in the back and cheer you on like we're watching Rock'em Sock'em Robots instead of just also hitting him.
Yeah.
And I mean, you'd think, especially with Roscoe being the character that is your like main robot guy engineer who knows how to do all the stuff to robots, that when they were distracted, one of the big things we keep seeing is there's a bunch of wires in the back of their neck.
Yeah, you can just turn them off.
And the fact that he never just walks up to the super badass robot and is like, and done.
Yeah, because keep in mind, when we say robot in this situation, outside of a single R2-D2 looking one they build just to patrol hallways, every other one of them is in a rubber robot. It's just some blind guy in a rubber robot suit.
Yeah, it's not the best.
Yeah, anyway, they take the bridge, they get the captain. We start seeing the other big joke from this, which is that all of the people that they take as prisoners are castrated and turned into eunuchs. So there's some eunuchs on the bridge as well, and they are all dressed in white leotards.
I mean, we don't know that yet,
we
but
don't
we
know
will
that,
find
it's
it
It's what they are.
Yeah.
And they take the bridge, but one of the eunuchs manages to bravely hit the emergency button.
Oh, boy. So that starts an alarm, and now they have to leave.
After the part where they get the food out of the automat that the bridge has on it.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, man, you want a lizard leg? And he just throws him a chicken leg. It's the future, so this is lizard.
Yeah. In the future, it's harder to have chickens than lizards, I guess. Yeah.
Although, you know, weirdly, the movie is going to have a lot of farm animal business in it for a long time, significantly later.
Yeah. Also, one of my favorite bits in this is just, there are some animals here. So, yeah, they have to go escape, but fucking Captain Jason is just like, well, I gotta go kidnap that lady.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, he does.
He just does, and they steal enough ice, but then they're getting chased by the enemy. And then it turns out that their ship can split into three ships so they can try and escape.
Yeah. That's at least somewhat interesting and creative where they're like, we're going to send a third of our crew to each section of the ship,
mm-hmm.
split into three. And that way, you know, they can only chase one of us. So at least two thirds of us, no matter what, will get away.
Yeah. So this is where we lose Zeno and Perlman and Houston for a while.
Yeah.
They're not going to be in the movie for the next half hour. And boy, are they lucky.
God bless them. They got out easy. So just Jason and Roscoe in the middle section
mm-hmm.
are chased. And they're like, oh, why is it always the middle section that gets chased? Gee willikers.
And then they get captured. Robots and dudes in Knight Templar outfits come in. We meet our movie's primary bad guy, whose name I do not remember.
Zorn.
So Zorn comes in, he's like, surrender, and I will not kill the man who is lying on the ground with an injury. Okay, we surrender. I killed your man.
Ha-ha!
I'm a liar.
I'm just bad for some reason.
Anyway, you two I won't kill. You two are going in the capture tunnels.
Yeah, we're gonna send you off to get, you know, turned into those white-haired guys. You're gonna get castrated and turned into slaves, because mm-hmm. we'll lobotomize you. Get rid of your junk.
Yep.
All right, great.
Yep. Meanwhile, the princess has woken up and is basically like, hey, come on, just let me go. What the fuck? Let me go. Hey, I don't want it. And she's in the middle section, so she gets captured and taken recaptured, I guess, and goes with Zorn at this point.
Yeah. She gets, at this point, she's just getting rescued.
Yes.
But they all get taken back to Mithra, our main big evil place that is the one place that has all of the water.
Uh-huh.
And they are put into some cages. We meet Killjoy, John Matuszak's character.
This is what I mean about him just bullying his way into the movie.
He just shows up and he's like, hey, man, can I get a like half of your remaining soup for this big gold necklace thing? And he's like, no, man, gold's useless. We're going to die. I'd rather have some soup. And he's like, okay, what about one quarter of what's left after you've just had that drink for this gold? And he's like, sure, man, fine, whatever. And then immediately behind them, once they make the trade, some guy's like, you take my gold necklace, god damn it, bruh!
I'll kill every one of you! And they'll talk him down. They're like, dude, it doesn't matter where we're going. And he's like, I'll just search every one of you. If I find that necklace, I'm gonna kill you. I'll rip your head off. Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Also, there's a priest in there, and the priest we find out that they won't castrate the priest just in case there's a god.
Yeah, that's the joke. Oh, yeah. They'll leave the monk alone just in case there's a god.
But just to make this clear, this dude's name is Killjoy, is John Matuszak, and he bullies his way into this conversation and the movie in general. But by the time we get to the point where they reconvene with our other characters, the other characters know him already.
It's so weird because they have no idea who this guy is. They're just like, who the fuck are you? What? You want some of my soup? That's weird. And then we get a gag where when they get to the planet and they get offloaded in their cages, they're like, all right, monk, come on out. We'll deal with you first. And Killjoy comes out wearing the monk's robes and he's like, bless you, my son. Mm-hmm. And then winks at our main guys and leaves. And I'm like, that's a great gag.
Yeah.
That's the one funny thing is this guy.
Yeah. If he just kept doing droopy dog shit throughout the movie and just popping in and then leaving again without getting a scrape on him.
Yeah.
Because that would have been fine.
He does it again later. And it's just like, oh, this is great. I want him to keep doing this throughout the whole film. Just continually pop up wherever they happen to be and be like, hey, guys, how's it going?
I'm also here. But instead, he joins them shortly after this. And by the time they get to the next planet, they reconvene with like Perlman. And Perlman's like, Killjoy, how you doing?
Hey, buddy, I like you. And I'm like, what the fuck?
How come you know him and these guys don't?
So they get taken to the processing plant to be turned into lobotomized eunuchs.
Mm-hmm.
And then right as the like weird metal mouth thing that would bite your dick off goes to get them, it doesn't. And they go through, and on the other side of the machine, they see the princess who's like, now, just play along or else you'll get castrated for real.
Mm-hmm.
I have plans for you.
Yeah. Also, everyone who works on the assembly line for the castration machine is a sight gag of some kind. Plus, Jason can't stop hitting on people as he makes his way down. He's like taped to naked to a thing, and he's being dragged towards a machine that'll cut his dick off. He's like, hey, how about later, you and me, huh? What do you say, we hook up? And she's like, I don't think you'll be able to get it up.
I don't think you'll be up for it.
And then he gets excited when a hot lady puts shaving cream on him, but then the big gag is that it's an old wobbly guy who actually shaves him.
Well, it's the wobbly guy who shaves his face, but the gag is it's a gay-looking guy who's got the one for his balls.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, no, he's going to be touched by some kind of queer-mo.
But then he gets sort of rescued and dressed up as a eunuch where they bleach their hair for some reason. I guess the idea was that once you get eunuched,
they just get a wig?
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, they put a wig on them, but I think the idea is supposed to be that the rest of them get, when they get eunuched, their hair turns white.
I don't know. I have no idea, because they don't go into it.
No.
They also don't really go into the fact that we saw, like, half a dozen people on this, like, conveyor belt,
mm-hmm.
where they were dealing with the whole process of getting everyone ready to have their dick bitten off. But apparently once you get past the dick bite off part, no one is there.
No.
Because no one is there to realize, like, hey, you still got a dick. Like, no one sees that when they put them in their big, weird white leotards.
No, which is super
tight.
When they
give them their white hair, when they do anything else, they're just like, yeah, I guess no one works anymore.
I mean, I guess that metal Pac-Man thing isn't really supposed to get their dicks just so much as their balls. It's supposed to take their balls off, which is maybe why the people who are checking their junk and leotards aren't like, hey, wait a minute, there's still a wiener in here.
And they, of course, have to have a little gag when they get through where they they need to pretend to be castrated, so they gotta be all high-pitched now.
Yeah, they talk like this.
Oh, okay.
And all the eunuchs, the regular eunuchs, talk like that all the time.
Yep. Yeah, although, so that's we only ever works. Hear one of them right now. For the entirety of the film, even if we see some in the background, they will never speak.
Yeah.
It's just this one scene in the factory.
Yeah, yeah. And,
but as soon as they come out, the princess and her nanny show up and are like, oh, we're getting slaves to work in our sludge center or whatever. We'll take the black one and this one right here, even though he doesn't look as good as the other ones. Ah, that's right. I'm making disparaging comments
about you. It doesn't matter because we're working him in the sludge facilities.
It doesn't matter if he's good looking.
Yeah. So, he doesn't go work in the sludge facilities. After they buy him at the slave center, instead he's carrying around a tray of tiny sandwiches at a goofy future party.
Yeah, we go to the royal future rave where he and Roscoe are dressed up as, you know, the eunuchs still and doing, like, handing out drinks and sandwiches and shit.
Yeah.
And
everyone's doing avant-garde goofball dances or floating on the ceiling because they take a drug that gives them electrical flying powers.
And every single one of them is absolutely spiking the camera at every opportunity. Just staring right into it.
Yeah. There's
you're
a
like, nice. Hey, guy. Nice.
In the future, you break the fourth wall.
In the future, everyone notices the camera. And eventually, we find out from the princess that, like, oh, I've got a plan. I need you guys to take me to the pirate moon where all the pirates hang out because you're pirates and you'll know how to get there because my dad left to go find the mythical seventh world, which everyone's like, oh, that's just an old wives' tale. There's no such thing. And she's like, nope, my dad definitely found it, but he ran off. And last I knew, he was in the company of some pirate named
Lanky Nibs,
and I gotta go find him at the pirate moon.
Yeah.
And when Jason and Roscoe get together to, like, discuss what's going on, he pulls them into a back room where a bunch of, like, robots are just hanging out. He's like, man, what's going on? We gotta figure out what's happening. And then fucking Killjoy is there in a suit of armor and just lifts the helm up. He's like, hey guys, you mind? And takes a drink and drinks it. Is like, have a good time. And then just shuts the lid again.
He wants them to go get him a sandwich or some cake or something too. Yeah. He's like, hey, can you give me some sandwiches or cake or something? Anything with sugar in it, whatever. Just go get me food.
That's it. And then they leave that room and they try to leave with the princess when Zorn calls out. He's like, oh, they're trying to escape. Go get them.
And then they have a comedy motorcycle escape where all four of them are on one motorcycle, and they get split up as basically Jason and the princess have an easier time escaping. Roscoe and Killjoy get stuck having to bargain with a robot pimp to leave to go into his car.
Yep, a robo pimp with a car from Logan's Run.
Comes all rolling up to them and showing, like, basically softcore 1-900 number commercials on his chest
plate. We got
the
good kitties. Do you have money?
Do you want to push it into my fine kitties?
Come on, soul brother. I know you would like this.
We take water, gold, expensive drugs. Luckily, they still have that necklace, so they just go with the pimp, and then later they're just on the ship. We don't know. I assume they just beat him up and take his car, and then they use his car to get to space.
I mean, they gave him the gold. I assume he just went, dude, here's gold. Just fucking drive me to the spaceport. And he does.
Very well could be. No, I may be a robo pimp, but I do obey the laws.
Sucka.
I must call the authorities.
I need it to be known that he is doing the robo version of the standard jive pimp lingo as well.
So really be more like, no, I must alert the 5-0. But yeah, they just go with him into his car. Welcome to my fly hoopty.
So bad. Hate it so much. They all get to the ship that the princess, I guess, is supposed to own, but doesn't know what the fuck is in it.
Yeah, she has her own ship, but, I mean, she's just a super rich princess. Oh, and that nanny gets to go with them, too. She's very important.
Yes, that's the nanny and the princess and their personal high-quality robot, Percy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Roscoe, Jason, and Killjoy, who at this point is just part of it. I was, just, again, really hoping that he would just show up on Pirate Moon later without having gone with them.
Yeah.
And just be there. Mm-hmm. Be like, hi, guys. Hey. I'm also here.
That would have been a better joke.
Would have been a great gag, but no.
Instead, the three of them are like, yeah, we don't work for you anymore because we're pirates and you put us in a ship. So we're just going to go wherever we want to. And she pulls a gun on him, and we have a bunch of back and forth, but eventually he's like, yeah, fine, I guess I'll take you where you want to go.
Yeah, there is a bunch of ice in this princess's ship, and she's like, I'll give you basically like 75% of the ice in here,
yeah,
as long as you transport me where I want to go.
Yes, yeah. And then after that, they bumble around and unleash a little alien from a space egg, because Alien also came out before this movie.
Yep, they unleash a space herpy.
Yep, it's from the species of space herpes, but it's just a little alien slug monster that zips around on the ship.
And it does not get paid off at all. It's just, hey, there was this weird thing hatched from an egg, and it's a gross little worm monster with a face, and it bit Roscoe, and he's bleeding. Anyway, it'll show up like one more time and then get killed and do nothing.
Does it get killed? I thought it escaped into the kitchen vents and we never saw it again.
It did, and then eventually...
Oh, Percy steps on it.
Yeah, Percy gets it. He's like, oh, I killed it. Just offhandedly mentions, by the way, I killed that herpy.
Yeah. I assume that's just so that they had written themselves into the point where you get to the time warp and you're like, well, how's that going to affect that space herpy? That's going to be some special effects I'll have to do. Oh, shoot, can't have that.
Oh, no, we'll just say the robot got him.
Yeah.
It is terrible. I'm like... why is this in here? It doesn't do anything for one point where he gets to go, the ship has herpes. And you're like, that's not a joke. No, Stop that.
It's in here because Alien came out in 1979 or whatever. That's why it's in here.
And it would be fine if they actually did something with that instead of just going like, hey, here's a little thing that looks vaguely reminiscent of the early hatched alien.
Yeah.
Then that's it. That's all we got.
That's what it's in here for.
Doesn't even come out of a guy. It comes out of an egg.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, you know how the facehugger came out of an egg? Well, this thing does, and we don't have the budget to do it coming out of a guy. Also, this is supposed to be a comedy, not a horror. I don't know why we're doing this.
They did it in Spaceballs.
As a direct reference and an actual joke.
Yeah,
for
what
it.
I'm saying is that it is possible to do it as a comedy.
Yes.
By actually, you know, actually hiring William Hurt again. So oh, shit. Not again. Spaceballs is hit or miss, but that part's a hit.
Wait a minute. What did he have? The special? Well, change mine to the soup. Good choice. That's a funny send-up. This is a bad send-up.
Yeah, this whole movie is if it was nothing but just following along that weird robot that was standing next to Pizza the Hut.
Yeah.
Remember that? We were like, what the fuck is this guy even here? Is he just one of Mel Brooks's friends?
Yes.
What is this guy? Pizzas. You're gonna send out for you. Boo!
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, they managed to get back to the Pirate Moon. But, oh no, it turns out they're going to need a ground vehicle to go get Lanky Nibs.
Because there's
no way you could take a space vehicle to anywhere else on this planet.
They only landed that one spot. They don't even mention how they got down. They're just on the ground all of a sudden. So,
oh yeah, we don't have the
shuttles.
The amount of time that it would take to do that. But when they are down there, they are in a, like, one of those little trams you see in the airport. They're in one of those, but it says limo on the side.
Uh-huh.
Because all of the vehicles on Pirate Planet are pretty much just send-ups of Mad Max.
Yeah, they're Mad Max.
Which had also come out earlier. Yeah.
I like it when the pirate car shows up later to attack them, and it's just got big fake wheels on the sides.
Yes.
And you can see the regular wheels. It's like a parade float looking thing. It's adorable.
So Pirate Moon, they meet back up with Ron Perlman and Angelica Houston.
Who both know Killjoy already, which is super convenient, so we don't have to explain her anything.
Yeah, they're like, hey, we're here, and here's Killjoy. And they're like, I know him. That's great. He's part of the crew. And they are hanging out at a bar as the princess is trying to be like, all right, this is the guy I want to see. How are we going to get there? And we find out some frog person alien has the only car in town, apparently.
One car. And there's a...
I mean, not counting, obviously, the car we took to get here.
No, which we can't use right now because it's out of gas or something. So we need to seduce that frog alien. So he basically forces...
Come on, princess, why don't you go make it worth his while?
All you have to do is be real friendly and act real available. And she goes over there after a bunch of protesting that takes fucking forever and comes back and she and is like, yeah, that he's a she and you're her type.
She's real interested in you.
And he's like, nope, I'm not doing that. I can dish him out, but I can't take some.
And it's funny, though, because then it's weird because she's like, oh, now I've got the upper hand. You've got to go try and seduce that frog alien. I'm like, no, he doesn't. This is your deal. You want a car. He doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
If he goes, no, I'm not doing it, then you don't have a car to complete your
thing. He even tries that. He's like, no. And she's like, well, then you don't get any of the ice or the water or whatever.
It's like, you don't have any guns and we're on a pirate planet. I can take the water. It's fine.
But instead, he goes over there and hits on the frog lady, who gives him a ride in her only car in town. But not before two random schmoes who are just sort of background extras on this planet notice and try to start a fight with our characters because they want to hit on the princess?
No, because they want the water.
Oh,
they hear, one, that there's a 2 million credit bounty on Jason.
Yeah.
And then they also, the like main like pirate guy villain here, overhears that they have all this water there, but his little buddy who shows up with the goofy glasses,
yeah,
is like, hey, I followed that hard R N word over here.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I'm like, wow.
Right to the other dude, the person he's talking to, is one of this movie's like three black people.
Yeah, Roscoe is a black guy. Yes. Michael D. Roberts is the one who plays him.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I followed that N word here. And then realizes he is also talking to a black guy now and goes, sorry, black gentleman.
Yeah, and they have a plucked live parrot as this other character's like object of flair who just goes, distinguished black gentleman. He's like, oh, that wasn't worth plucking a parrot. That's mean.
Yeah, that was awful. Seeing the fucking fact that they had a parrot there that was completely naked, I went, part of me hopes... Oh, we found one that had a like skin
anxiety problem or something, yeah.
And it just didn't have feathers. But most of me knows you probably plucked an actual parrot and ding ding, one more reason to hate you. There's so many in this
scene. The two of them come over to start trouble, but Roscoe and Jason are off dealing with the frog lady, so they just kind of shrug. So this is Houston's time to do anything at all.
Yep. And you know, the one goofy guy is like, oh, I'll get you, I'll kick your chair over, and then I'll slice your table up with my big sword. And then Angelica Houston just clowns and cuts his head off, and is like, all right, and you, other guy, you need to apologize. And he's like, I'm sorry. And then she slices his face, cuts his eye patch off. It's like, you don't sound very sincere.
Yeah. And he's like, please accept my genuine apologies. And you think, oh, cool. Well, now this character's part of the crew or something, right? Because like he's distinctive looking and they actually force him to give a real apology. Not never seen again.
No, he is. He attacks them in the desert.
That's him in the desert?
Yes.
That was just random ass pirates.
No, that's him and some other guys.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I thought that was just him.
Nope.
Not him. Huh.
Yeah, so we find out Lanky Nibs is out in the middle of nowhere.
A place called Water or Sunnyvale or something. It was like, it doesn't matter. Whatever.
It doesn't matter.
Who cares?
They go out to see him after he seduces the frog lady.
This planet sure looks like the deserts immediately east of Los Angeles.
Boy, does it. And when they get out there, This guy has set up his own little camp. He has two little baby mules and two little, like, baby boars.
Uh-huh.
And some ducks, and it's very cute, but we saw a picture of him before, but oh my goodness, he's so much older than that picture.
Yeah, we saw the headshot of a young actor.
And now we see him as he actually is, 20 years older, because he was going through the time warp and he aged 20 years in 20 seconds.
Yep, but he does know where her dad had been recently and was like, I'm willing to tell you what planet I last hooked up was with him on.
And he went through. He got through. He made it to the seventh planet. He got, like, hollow images and full proof.
I saw the hollows.
I've seen everything. He did it.
I tasted the waters.
I know that it actually happened. I know he found a way to the seventh planet.
Yeah, so they're like, well, then come with us. And he's like, no, I'm old and I want to live here now. And then pirates show up to attack them in a land car boat.
A giant buggy boat that has big fake wheels and a big fake skull on the front.
Oh, God, that skull. I forgot about the fucking paper mache skull.
Yep, giant fucking skull on the front, and they're all running around on the top of it.
Looks like a freshman entry to be in the New Orleans parade cruise.
It is amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, they have to escape it.
They immediately murder the frog lady because they're like, oh, we don't have any more business for her, but she's technically still in the scene. The pirates immediately blow her up. And it looks like they blow up the car, but instead an explosion happens and apparently disintegrates her
because
she doesn't exist, but the car is fine.
Car's fine, though. Yeah, I mean, they already exhausted all the business they could possibly come up with for her. She was attracted to our main character, and at one point she asked him if he thought her dress looked nice.
Yeah, she ribbits, she has a little CGI tongue thing that flicks out. We were done.
We got all the jokes. So now they have to run away on the car, and indeed they do. It's very action-y and swashbuckly as Jason manages to get onto the pirate ship and just sort of kicks
them all off. Pushes everyone but the main guy off.
Yeah.
And then distracts him long enough for that car to ram into some fuel tank that explodes.
I just want to point this out as well, that Jason as a hero is a one-liner deliverer.
Yeah.
And all of his one-liners are like, they make you sad and depressed.
Ah!
Like this one, he just goes, don't forget to write. And then there's another one earlier where he kills a guy running a sword through him and says, ha, I guess we've got you pegged.
Oh, because he uses the fake leg from a robot. Like, a robot was missing a leg, and so they put, I guess, what you could call a peg leg on there. And then he stabs him with that and is like, we've got you pegged. And I went, that's...
Boo.
That's stretching it, my man. I see what you were trying to accomplish here. You didn't. If it had been an actual person's peg leg, I might have been like, okay, boo, but I guess.
Hmm.
But the fact that it was like, oh, it's a peg leg from a robot, I'm like, no, a robot doesn't get a peg leg. It just has a leg. It's a robot.
That's a leg. That's just, if it's on a robot, it's just a regular leg.
It's a thing made of metal that a robot walks around on.
Unless you were to build a fully metal robot and then attach an old-timey wooden pirate peg leg to that robot.
Yeah.
Then it's still just a robot leg because it's just a constructed piece like the rest of the robot, but it's old-timey wood, it looks funny, so it's a peg leg again.
Ugh.
I just want you to say, all of his one-liners are like, you're like, ugh.
My
back hurts.
Oh, man. Someone was forced to make this a comedy,
and they
gave you just the worst lines imaginable.
Yep.
So they go back to the ship, and they take off, because now they're going to go find Wenden at some random fucking planet.
Lanky Nibs is dead, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Lanky Nibs gets got.
But they do take all of his animals with them on the ship. So they're just going to be a constant thing in all the hallways from now on.
Yeah, when we get back to the ship, because we just cut from them being like, oh, Lanky Nibs, it's so unfortunate. We'll find that water. We'll end these wars for you, Lanky Nibs. And then it just cuts back to everyone being on the ship. And there are fucking mules and boars on it. And you're like, all right, sure. I guess.
I get it. Fine. And now whenever anyone has to walk down a hallway, they have to kind of carefully walk around to a bunch of little baby mules and piglets.
Yeah, which is probably the highlight of this, seeing Ron Perlman in like an apron going like, excuse me, and just walking past mules. I was like, that's great. That That did it. That's a good scene.
If the movie was 2 minutes long.
If the movie was 2 minutes long and it was Ron Perlman pets a baby mule, I'd be like, what a great film. Film of the year.
Short form Oscars. Give that to Ron Perlman pets baby mules.
So they fuck off and we get some weird fucking business in space. Mostly we get the return of the space herpy as it does its, hey, you remember Alien? Well, what if we had this little worm thing come out of a turkey breast instead of a person?
I think my favorite part of all that is when Ron Perlman, who's like the ship's cook, is making dinner for them, and they just have him say whatever business at all. So he's like looking at, first of all, the kitchen station is just a bunch of arms sticking out of a wall, so you can just have arms do whatever you need them to. You can be like, you, hold this, you, stir this, that kind of thing. So it's like the Wonka antechamber, but robot arms. But he's looking at a book, and he's like, all right, so what do I need to make for this? Next ingredient, huh? Let's see what the next ingredient is. That's a quarter teaspoon of carrots. Ah, these guys are big eaters, so I'm going to put in more than that. What the fuck calls for a quarter teaspoon of carrot?
I mean, I believe it was a quarter cup of carrots.
No, it was a teaspoon. I watched it twice.
Just went back. You're like, I couldn't have heard that right.
Yeah, exactly. Because he dumped some nasty shit in a bowl instead. And I was like, what is that?
It's look at carrots with goop oatmeal. On it.
Yeah, goopy carrots. But a quarter teaspoon of carrots.
Sure.
I guess because water's so scarce. So you have to make food with tiny things.
But...
He makes them a turkey and the fucking herpy comes out of it.
That's great. And then it runs away and everyone's like, oh my, a thing.
The space herpy. How long have you known that was on the ship? And I wanted them to be like, dude, it was on the ship when we got on. It was closet full of space contraband.
It was manifest for the ship.
Why did your ship have a manifest for space herpy? Why were you carrying that around? Don't put this on us.
This was your herpy.
But instead they're like, we're sorry.
I'm trying to remember what other dumb business we get before they get to Wendon. I think they just get there before we get the water scene, the like storm scene.
We do. That scene happens in the second part of once they've already got Valanche on the ship.
Yeah.
But they go to this random planet to look for Bruce Valanche. It's very misty there. It's just a soundstage with a fog machine. And out of the fog comes a bunch of Amazons on horseback because we haven't worked in that trope yet.
Yep. And they get everybody except for Roscoe.
Mm-hmm.
Roscoe manages to get by unscathed, but they capture Jason and Princess Karina, and they are taken before Bruce Valanche,
who plays Wendon, and he's just a dude sitting in a chair, who's flanked by Amazons that he's in charge of, and this character feels like again like there were a lot of lines that they were supposed to have been there, but they've completely removed them to make him into a joke. Because they're like,
I could not, like, until I had watched, like, the whole film, there had been nothing describing who this guy was, why they were going to see him, or anything like that. They just show up on the planet, and he's like, ah, and I can't let you go, because then these guys won't do what I say anymore. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Oh, that would ruin my current, my little game I've got going on. Okay, but you would never kill us because you're not that kind of guy. That's where you're wrong. Kill them, karma, or whatever. And, like, one of the Amazons goes to try and kill them. Like, we have no idea who the fuck this is, but they seem to have assumed that we know about half of his situation already.
Yeah, it's weird that he's like, oh, I can't tell you where your dad is because if you find your dad, I won't be in charge of the Amazons anymore.
I think it's because he's like got water, so they're working for water, and he knows that her dad has access to a lot of water, so it would ruin his current little power broker situation. But it feels like he's got something else going on. Like, no, you can't go in my back room. Stay out of there. Like, he does actually have something else going on. He's ahead.
Yeah.
He's just a head. The body is fake.
Yeah, he is a severed head, just Futurama style, on top of a fake body. And Roscoe shows up and threatens the head so that the Amazons let them go. And they find Princess Karina's father. But oh no, it's just an Omega super fancy robot that looks like a human. It's not actually him.
Yeah. Also, any cool robot we encounter from this point forward is automatically called an Omega robot.
Yeah. If it's good, it's an Omega robot.
Yeah. But he just stands up. He's like an animatronic. He just stands up and is like, it is you, my daughter. And she's like, no, you're not my dad. And then he just stands there until they push him over.
Yeah, and then sits back down where he was.
Yeah.
All right.
And they take Wendon's head with them for fun.
I mean, it's
Bruce Valanche. At least he's, you know, an old hand at shitty, campy comedy, so he fits in.
Yeah.
And they stick him on a table so that he can, you know, they don't have to worry about the special effect aspect of it. Just like how anytime they're holding him up as a head, they're only holding him so you can just see the top of the collar of his neck so that they can just film it.
Yeah. I was like, all right, I get it. That's fine.
Yeah.
Sure. They get back on board and they're trying to figure out, well, gosh, if my dad wasn't here, how will we ever know how to get to the seventh world or what my dad left behind or blah, blah, blah.
Oh, and then they do techno babble for like a split second.
Yeah, they're like, oh, but what if we look into the circuits of the Omega robot that looks like my dad that he left and see if there's anything there? And what's there is one weird trick. Dentists hate him. And it's just a like file that brings up the image of a ring,
and they're like, well, I have my ring my dad gave me, but where's his? It's just up Bruce Valanche's down his fucking throat, so yeah, it's
he just
goes
there. Blah, blah, blah. There you go,
here's a ring. And they're like, okay, fine, what the fuck else do you have up there? No,
yeah, I don't have anything in there unless you want to make a deposit.
Only good joke in the movie.
Hey, Bruce Valanche, good to see you.
Hi, Bruce.
Hey, Bruce, what are you doing here? Then when she spins the dad's ring on top of her ring, that spits out a hologram, and the dad's like, hey, here are the coordinates for the exact flight path you need to get to the seventh world. If you deviate even like a percentage of a degree, you will die. Anyway, I'm sure this will solve all of our water problems, as that will make it easy to get back and forth and transport tons of water from this planet.
I assume that their plan is to just get in there and be like, yeah, you know, fuck everyone else. We're just going to stay on water planet and have all the water.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're like, great. Well, now we have the coordinates. It's like 2.83 for off the galactic ecliptic or whatever the fuck. Just some babble.
Some shit.
And so they fly that way. But right as they make their way to the point where they're going down the warp tunnel, oh, no, here comes the bad guy Templar.
Oh,
by the way,
we skipped the sex scene.
Not only did we skip the sex scene, but we also skipped the scene where the bad guy Templar talks to the big bad guy.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
that? There's like a one scene shot of a really old man.
Yeah, and John Carradine.
Is that John Carradine?
That's John Carradine in his last fucking role, I think.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, they talk to John Carradine to Zorn, mm-hmm. and he's just like, hey, I need you to stop them from getting the seventh planet, and he's like, eh, it's fine, we've got a tracker on board their ship, this is all according to plan, we're gonna find the dad and everything, and then we'll continue our iron grip on the galaxy because we're the only ones with water, and if someone else finds water, we're fucked.
Out of all the other things in this movie, that's the one that feels the most to me like it was filmed before the assignment to make this into a comedy happened, because it's deadpan serious.
Yes.
And John Carradine is playing like a wounded, broken man lying on a hospital, like a super futuristic hospital bed. And when he comes up, he just spins around and he's like, what news? And they give this little bit.
They tell me that I should have my mind be uploaded, but I can still feel, damn it, with my hand. Hold my hand.
After all these aeons, I can still feel. The body wants what it wants. And you're like, oh, look at that. They're like,
They have the technology to upload his brain, but he wants to still feel and be human for as long as possible.
That's not
an actual thing.
These are not themes that are explored elsewhere. There's no other mention of the ability to upload people.
No, this is, I believe you are accurate, a scene that they were like, this is a serious space opera, and we've got John Carradine, and he's going to give a very impassioned speech, and it's going to be a cool bit of world building. And then it's still in there, but everything else is like, and then the ballsack alien poops himself. Womp, womp, womp.
And then they have sex.
Ugh.
And then they all fucked. But yeah, this one scene, like, I'm sure that once they switched it back to a comedy, they're like, well, we have a lot less money. Should we contact John Carradine and see if he wants to film that scene again with like Groucho Marx glasses on or something?
I don't want to be uploaded. I can still feel my dick. Womp, womp, womp.
I'm an old man. Just that. He was just like, oh, no.
How about, no, I'm about to, for reals, die. I'm good.
We want to do a scene where we drop a piano on you. What do you say? We're gonna put a big red X on the ground, and then you stand on it, and then an old timey piano comes down out the sky and smashes your dick. And he's like, "No,
I'm John Carradine. Fuck off."
But then, yeah, there is also the horrible sex scene.
Yeah,
right after Bruce Valanche gets placed on a robot body so he can walk around and not always have to be a head prop. He comes popping in, and he's like, yeah, the princess is looking for you.
And not established beforehand, but he shows up with a program that's like some sort of passion storm. He's like, ooh, princess, I've got that program you asked for.
Uh-huh.
It's called Passion Storm. And then they go into a room, which is, I guess, basically this movie's version of a holodeck.
Yes.
But it's just, oh, you put this in and then the TV screen walls will display something and put some sound on.
There's
or
only the one. This is a holodeck by way of having sex in front of a big TV.
Yes. And
which is great. I mean, I'm not knocking that.
No. But then the most confusing bit for the world building happens where they're like, you know, the background screen is showing a bunch of waves rolling and a storm happening. You're like, oh yeah, that would be great. Because in a galaxy where it's been 10,000 years since there's been any sort of real planet with water on it, having that as a background picture would be like, ah, yes, this is great.
It'd be kind of funny if they both just got mesmerized by that instead. They're like,
water's so cool.
Oh, God damn. Wait, what's wrong? How come you're not still going? I mean, there's fucking rain clouds. Look at that shit.
You never see that.
That's so weird. Maybe you should just sit here and watch that instead.
But
honestly,
no.
the footage is such boring stock footage of rain and waves that I really kept expecting for lyrics and like English and Korean to be displayed over it.
But eventually they start going at it and then it drops water like it's raining.
Yeah,
on
it's
them.
It's a 4D experience. They drop water. They get mild electric shocks.
But I'm like,
yeah,
what the fuck in a whole setting where it's like, water's the most precious commodity. No one has it. And if, you know, you can find it, it's worth everything. Anyway, we're going to use it to just douse people while they bone. What?
Well, don't worry. That wasn't water. It was like lube or something. It's silicon-based lube. It's fine. Although I really like the idea now that they basically, when you go to like any theme park, they always have the one movie theater that's showing like, Rio, that movie you forgot about that CGI with the two parrots, but now in 4D. That means the chair vibrates sometimes and wind blows on your face.
Yeah, we've got a little, like, whipper tickler thing on the back of your legs so mm-hmm. that when a thing goes running by, we can go...
Now I want the version of that that's for fucking. Like, you could just go into the 4D fucking experience and wind blows on your face when you're trying to have sex.
You go into the 4D porn.
Yeah.
As soon as the cum shot happens, just a little spritzer goes
chair
up the back.
Vibrates a bit. But yeah, and we also get a line in here about some oral sex when she's like, hey, shouldn't you be at the controls? And he goes, if you insist.
And then goes down south.
Mm. If you follow. This scene goes on for so goddamn long.
It's terrible. I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, there should only ever be a sex scene if it furthers the plot. But I'm like, no, this is boring and bad.
It's just boring. It's the only problem with it.
And...
because especially it's Men in Tights did the sword is penis joke, right? Remember that behind
yeah.
the curtain? And they do the same thing here where he's like, maybe I should take off my saber.
Oh, let me get it. Oh, it's so stiff. Your belt, I mean.
Yeah, he's like, I don't care about any of this. The reason it worked in Men in Tights is because there was an audience.
And immediately afterwards, an alarm goes off because Zorn's cruiser is popped up behind them.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, we're going to fucking get you. We know you found the way to the seventh planet, but I don't know what our plan is. We'll control it. We'll destroy
them.
It.
They're going to destroy the planet so that they stay in control of everything.
I mean, which is weird. You'd think they would be like, oh, we should, if we have the way to get to it, just have more of our own water. That's just like more money we could have.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there, but it is their dumb plan. But yeah, they're gonna board, and they've already entered the warp tunnel part of this whole storyline, which means that they can't fight back really.
Yeah, they're like, well, we can't do evasive maneuvers or do anything, because if we deviate at all from the course that we currently have, we will just die in the time warp.
Yeah. Now, this doesn't mean that they aren't time warping, because that's the movie's big final gag sequence, is that you still get old really fast in this dumb tunnel, and increasingly fast as well. So at early point, they're just like, hey, I think we're starting to get a little older.
Oh, yeah. It looks like, you know, for every 30 minutes, we're aging a year now, and it's just going to get faster.
Yeah.
And
now it's just fucking sight gags with fight scenes happening during the sight gags. And they keep trying to show you that the future, that the time stream is happening by speeding up the footage.
Yeah.
For little increments. That's so irritating.
It's like, oh, he's going to go hit some guy. And the walk from him, like from going to where he is to the robot he's going to attack, they just speed it up and be like,
mm-hmm. So, yeah, now everyone's just going to fucking fight with big fake beards on and shit.
The big gag here is that sex that they just had got her pregnant, but because it's in a time warp, she goes through pregnancy, has the kid, and the kid grows up during this whole time warp sequence.
Yeah, so they're fighting. Robots are being made to fight. Roscoe's made took a robot that won a fight earlier in the movie and spent a bunch of time and money on upgrading him, paints him black so they can do one joke about that.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't mean to be insensitive, but why is he black?
I wanted to make him perfect.
Yeah, that's a good response line, but then that robot shows up and gets in a quick fight and doesn't matter.
And, you know, we get, like, Zorn, the big bad guy, shows up on a fucking, like, palanquin because now he's too old to walk around.
Uh-huh, and everyone's fighting with all these robots, and it's really boring, and at one point, Valanche shows up and tells, getting increasingly beardy, Yurik that he needs to go talk to his girlfriend, the princess. She has a baby, and he's just like, that's not mine. Nope, that isn't mine. Although he's adorable. I kind of, maybe he is mine. Nope, gotta
go. And then the baby pees on his face, and he's like, oh, that's definitely my kid. I have a thing about peeing on faces, as you well know.
What do you think was loaded in that passion storm?
The titular passion storm.
Dare you enter my magical realm?
They fight, and they get so old.
Some of them are dying.
And, oh, it's what a joke. Roscoe's afro is giant and white now because he's so old.
And Perlman gets super old in one of the fights and just keels over and dies halfway through it because he's so old.
The nanny turns into a skeleton because she was already old to begin with.
And eventually, everyone's getting too old to fight. Robots are approaching. It looks really bad. And then Robert Yurik shows up as his own son in even swashbucklier outfit.
And knocks over some robots and is like, we did it, Dad. I saved the day. Oh, I'm so glad to see you, Dad.
I'm glad we finally got to meet. This is wonderful. And then they start flashing back until the time warp is over.
Yeah, they got through. And it turns out none of that actually happened. That was all part of the time warp, and now that they're through the time warp, it's undone. Except the other ship, the Zorn's ship, is completely gone. Because it was attached to the side of it, it was off of course, because it wasn't just right on the same level they were, and it disintegrated in the time warp.
Uh-huh, and so they make it, they see what's clearly just space footage of, like, Earth.
Yeah, it's supposed to be Earth.
Yeah. Wow, there it is, the water planet. We made it. And Roscoe, who's had a side gag the whole movie of how he doesn't want to be a pirate, he just wants to make robots and sell robots, is like, finally, you know, we made it and we're all rich and we don't have to be pirates anymore.
Yeah, we're out of a job.
We're out of a job. And Angelica Houston is hooking up with Sloth. And then we just cut to credits immediately in a blessed move where we don't have to hear anything else about this.
Yeah, it was supposed to end with a shot of them literally going over modern day Miami Beach because it was supposed to be, the big gag is this is Earth, is the seventh planet.
Right.
But then they cut that and you know what? Great.
Good.
There was less movie.
Less movie.
But yeah, there you go. That was the Ice Pirates. Let's get into our bests and worsts now.
Sure, I love that idea.
Jeff, what is the best single thing in The Ice Pirates?
I mostly just want to say John Matuszak because he was fun and he seemed to really know what kind of movie he was in.
Yep.
But I'm gonna leave. I'm pretty sure that's what you wanted to say. So I'm gonna go with Bruce Valanche's brief appearance. I just feel like again his role is corny and terrible.
Oh, but he comes out of nowhere, means nothing to the plot, could have been entirely excised and it would have been the same movie, but he at least has one joke that lands.
Also, he seems like an old pro at this exact kind of comedy. So it feels like he belongs here, where a lot of the other characters feel like they're holding these lines with like long sticks at great distance.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm going to lean right in. I'm Bruce Valanche, damn it.
I've got no pride.
And then he just retired to write the Oscars for 30 years.
Well.
And I liked his little appearance and how much he felt like he was like, I get the material.
No, I get it. I know what we're doing. I've done this. I've written this.
Don't tell me how to play the character. It sickens me.
All right.
What's your favorite thing?
My favorite thing in this, I mean, it would have been Matizak if they had kept the gag going.
Oh, sure, that's fair.
Like, that was a gag when they did it the first two times with the monk and then him being in the robot room. I was like, fuck, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
Oh, something to look forward to. And then, no, he just immediately joins. So the best thing in this is the couple of little baby mules and little baby boars that are on the ship that are adorable. And I'm like, oh, look at you. Now you're part of the crew.
And you do actually, we skipped right over it, but there is a reason that they're on the ship at all, which is so they can do a sight gag of adult mules and boars later in the movie.
Yeah.
When the time warp is happening.
Worst thing.
I mean, the rape and pillage line, it kind of just makes you hate the main character within the first 5 minutes. There's just no recovery from that, where he's just like, oh, I wanted to rape this lady. Why are you stopping me from raping this lady?
I found an unconscious lady, and I wanted to kidnap her and probably rape her.
I'm your comedy Han Solo, and I wanted to force my penis on someone.
Oh, boy. I love this.
Yeah. I'm endeared.
Ugh.
Yeah, so that's my least favorite thing. What about you?
I mean, part of me was like, God damn, having the hard R N-word in there was out of place and weird.
That did feel very strange.
I want to say probably the worst bit of this is the bits with the, that initial scene where they're going on to steal the ice initially,
mm-hmm.
With the robots that just goes on.
There's two major robot fights. The other one happens during the time warp, and they're both so long and so boring.
And it's just like, hey, get in there. I need you to go do stuff. What are you waiting for? And it's just poorly shot. You have no idea what's going on. It's just guys in just shitty robot suits, barely able to move, and kind of like turning and trying to swing their arms towards each other.
Yeah.
It looks like crap, and they spend so long on it.
Mm-hmm. They really seem to feel like they had a hit with that.
Like, oh, this is the hook that'll get people.
Yeah.
Our dumb, shitty robots.
Yeah, so, yeah, I didn't care for that either.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on and do our ratings, where each of us will give a rating from 0 to 5 so we can get a final rating out of 10 for the movie. Jeff.
1.5? 1.5. I mean, there's some jokes here and there that I didn't absolutely hate, and it's kind of fun to watch, like, such a young Ron Perlman and Angelica Houston and so on. The main characters all suck.
Oh, yeah.
The story sucks. The comedy is terrible. But you're still like, oh, look at that. There's a lot of we're going to put on a show energy here. So it's 1.5. It fails, but at least it tried something.
Yeah.
From you?
I think 1.5 is honestly right. It doesn't get anything correct. Like,
no.
It does not manage to hit any of the notes that it wanted. And honestly, the entire movie, I was just going, all right, this is all of the stuff that you were trying to take from Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And then occasionally going, oh, this is the stuff you took from Alien. And this is the stuff you took from Robin Hood.
Yeah.
All right. Well, great.
I got to ask, I know I mentioned earlier that the screenwriter director also made Mac and Me and Tammy and the T-Rex. Have you seen Tammy and the T-Rex?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
It might be on the list. Probably is. Please, no one suggest for it to be on the list.
The premise of the movie is that the director had access to a statue of a T-Rex that could kind of wave its arms and open its mouth and close its mouth.
The premise is I had something.
I had this thing.
Wow.
Also, Denise Richards and the guy who played Bernie in Weekend at Bernie's.
I've got access to Denise Richards and a shitty dinosaur puppet. Let's make a movie.
It's really something. But anyway, yeah. So I was just curious because I know you have to have seen Mac and Me.
See, no.
You haven't seen
Mac
and Me.
Why would I watch Mac and Me?
Because a lot of people, you're of an age.
nah, man, I've seen that one segment of Back and Me enough times that I think I'm good.
I don't know what you're talking about. I would never.
I've seen Paul Rudd be interviewed enough times that I've seen it.
He never does it on purpose. And he certainly won't do it this time.
I'll hold the football this time.
I love that they did it on an episode of Coco's fucking podcast, too.
This is a podcast. You can't do this.
You know, I said the same thing. I agree with you.
I'm on your side.
God damn it.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us for this review of The Ice Pirates. We will be back in another couple weeks with another movie mastery. But if you are still hungry for more content, of course, we have plenty for you. If you want to head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/systemmastery, you can find all of our stuff there. And if you support us at any level, you get ad-free versions of the show.
Sure do.
And, of course, you'll get bonus content based on the level that you subscribe at. You can unlock a ton of shows that we do all the way up to the $10 a month level that gives you all of our stuff, an extra like 9 or 10 shows a month or something.
Yeah.
And
so much. We make so much stuff.
We make a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And it also, of course, helps the show, lets us keep doing what we're doing.
We do what we do.
And right now we've still got our TV mastery at that $10 level.
Oh, yeah.
Going through very special episodes.
Very excited.
And we are running through a Mr. Belvedere classic. And the great thing is there are two Mr. Belvedere very special episodes that I could have chosen. So you'll just have to support to find out which one.
It's the one where he sits on his balls.
It's a very special episode about Belvedering yourself.
Yeah. And you know, I don't know if you've seen that particular episode, but there is a part at the end where he does the whole friends. We've had a lot of fun here today.
But let's take it down for a moment and have a serious discussion. Sitting on your balls is no joke.
Listen up, liberals. I sat on my balls.
Sitting on your balls to own the libs.
All right. My wife left me.
Thank you. We'll be back. And until we are, all of you out there, have a good one.